I have a very strange text for a carol service. I certainly don't think I've ever had one so strange in 15 years here at St. Helens. It comes from Paul's letter at the end of his life, 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, where he says this, rather strongly and almost bluntly, "Have nothing to do with silly myths. Have nothing to do with silly myths." Now, although that's an unusual text for Christmas time, I don't think it's unsuitable. There were, I suspect, some so-called teachers who were beginning, towards the end of Paul's life, to try to bolster up the Christian faith with legendary material. They had the idea that if they did that, they would strengthen people's faith. Now, that kind of thing has gone on in the church all down the years, and you may actually see it on the card, which I hope you have, for our Tuesday services in January, which I think is a series of a very important subject. But in the left card, not looking at the series now, you'll see a little girl's seal, which is the seal of the Priory of St. Helen, which is where the people are standing over there. And you will see Helena presenting the piece of the true cross that she'd found to some of her friends, only the piece has got so large now, if you look at the cross, you'll find it's the whole cross altogether. Now, Helena was, in fact, a very fine Christian woman. She was the mother of Constantine, and she did very many fine things in her life, but there is no basis whatever for the idea that she found any of the true cross when she made a trip to the Holy Land. That kind of legend has always grown up around the things of religion, and it's grown up around the Christian faith, and I'm always very sorry when it does, because it makes shrewd and honest men of the world think there is no more to our Christmas story than a fairy tale. I was interested on Sunday morning to see that Alistair Cook's position in that famous weekly letter of his is rather akin to that. He said that obviously the coming of this man Jesus had made more difference to the world than the coming of any other man into history. But he said the origins of Jesus are so covered in legend that it's impossible to get really to the truth. Now, I suspect that a very great many people like Alistair Cook feel that we are coming into a church like this, talking about angels in the sky, looking at little Christmas trees like that. And they feel that what we are doing really is once a year in the middle of the cruel world, and it's been particularly cruel for some people in the financial community, to have a little bit of a fairy story. And I think that Paul is saying that he is not in business for fairy stories. And so knowing that his own time is coming to an end, he says, have nothing to do with them. We are wanting to tell people the truth. I thought that in these very few minutes I would give you, if I may be so bold as to do so, and there may be some parents here who could do it a great deal better than I can, to give you three hallmarks of a fairy tale. And to put this in contrast with the Christmas story that we're celebrating today. The first hallmark that I put down in my notes is this. A fairy tale is not really true. Now, from the times when they were read to me and when I've read them to other people, fairy stories can be very delightful. They can even be memorable. I can remember just one or two, at least I can remember the characters. And they can be rather moving and exciting. But they're not really true. And everybody knows that, from grandmother who reads it to the tiny tot who hears it. But the moment you turn to the Christian creed that we sometimes say in church, you find yourself moving into the realm of history. This man suffered. When did he suffer? He suffered under Pontius Pilate, a particular man living in a particular place at a particular time. What happened after that? Well, we're told he rose again. And then it says, rather strangely, on the third day. That's really sticking your neck out, isn't it? Not the second day, not the fourth day, not sometime, but at a particular time that had been foretold. So that the Christian creed, right from the beginning, has claimed to be a particular story about a particular man in a particular place, and to root it in history. And we have to say that if that history isn't true, there's nothing to celebrate. Now, I have rather an interesting book in my hand that I hope some of you can see from where you are. It's a book called Redating the New Testament by Dr. John Robinson of Cambridge. Even if you don't know this particular book, and it's far too expensive even to give at Christmas, $8.50, I'm sure you know the great book, or the famous book, I won't say it was a great book, the famous, notorious book that he wrote in 1963 called Honest to God. Now, in this book, he has returned to the New Testament records. And he says he set out to answer a question. Why is it that none of the New Testament writings, not one, mention the destruction of Jerusalem in A.D. 70? And Dr. John Robinson, who's one of the ablest New Testament scholars of the day, comes up with the answer, surprise, 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 that all the documents of the New Testament were written before it happened. And that's why they don't mention it. Now, do you understand why the Sunday press are not serializing this book as they serialized the other one? Because the other book seemed to share a bishop going back on the Christian faith. This one shows the man going back to the documents for himself and finding how incredibly early they probably are. He says probably because he asks us to debate it. Not that most of us can do all the work that he's done. Actually, that book is rather embarrassing. When I was at college, I remember it was often thought that the gap between Christ and the first writing of the story was so long that any amount of legends or fairy stories might have got added to the story of Jesus, and our job at college was to take these away. Sometimes the church has taken so much away that nothing is left. Now we're told by Dr. Robinson that the gap is so short that there's hardly time for people to write the story. And that St. Mark had his pen in his hand, sitting at his desk by A.D. 45. Christianity, then, is not based on the fact that Christ came into my heart, and it's true for me, though incidentally I thank God that that is so. Christianity is based upon the fact that Christ came into the world, therefore it is true for everyone, for you. First mark of a fairy story, then, it is not really true. But this story actually happened, and if it happens, life can never be the same for anybody. Second mark of a fairy story, it's a pleasant form of escapism, I've written in my notes. Now, I know that children like this kind of escapism when they're going to bed at night, especially when the lights are going to be turned out. And I think we sometimes need some escapism in the cruel and cold world of today. And there is a sense, let me say, that when you're a Christian, you can, for a moment, withdraw into the presence of God, the companionship of Christ, and find real and substantial refuge and help. I don't think I could survive without that. But to say that Christianity is escapism is to misunderstand the whole story. I'm sorry today, in some ways, we didn't have that wonderful prologue from John's Gospel, where Jesus is likened to the light of the world that came shining to every man. But just a few pages on, John says this. This is the judgment, that light has come into the world, and men rejoiced in the light. No, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Coming into Malta once, just after the end of the war, I was standing on the bridge of one of warships, and the captain ordered the searchlights to be put on. And these immense searchlights beamed into the dockyard at Malta, and there they discovered two men playing with the ropes by the side of the quay. And as the lights got them focused, they got up and rushed away. It looked as though they were up to no good. And what John the Evangelist is saying with great sorrow is that the great light of God has come into the world, and when it focused upon many of us, we scurried away because it was too bright. I wouldn't like to be in your shoes if you told John the Apostle that faith was a step into the dark. No, he would say that faith was coming into the light, but the light is so bright that I'm tempted to draw back. I hope that if you've never done so, you'll walk into that light, confessing your sins and asking God to reveal himself to you during this Christmas season. Thirdly and lastly, a fairy story I put down always has a happy ending. At least they did in my day. The prince and the princess were always wonderfully handsome, and they always married at the end, however many hobgoblins had gone across the page en route, and they always lived happily ever after. And I ask myself, and I ask you this Christmas, is the Christmas story like this? Is this a story where we just come aside for a moment and let's pretend? Well, I have bad news for you in some ways, because I don't think I can say that this book that I hold in my hands has a happy ending. It tells the greatest sermon that Jesus ever preached, the Sermon on the Mount. Have you ever read the Sermon on the Mount and how it ends? It ends with a house that has been built on sand collapsing in a heap. A picture of a house not built upon Christ. And at the end of the story of Christ, he's hung on a cross. Thankfully, we know that God allowed this and even purposed it for our sins and for our salvation. But it's not a very happy ending. That's what it cost. And if we look at the end of the Bible, we don't find a great society so loved by the politicians. We find the world going up in flames, which seems a bit more realistic. And yet, if that was all I had to say, it would be a sad carol service. It can be a happy ending. That's what the Bible is saying. It can be. It may not be, but it can be. And there's a story that I love in the Gospels of Jesus after he was grown up to be a man. When he began his public ministry, he didn't begin by preaching a sermon as I'm doing today. He didn't begin by writing a book. He began by going to a wedding, an ordinary wedding reception. And there he was, enjoying the reception with everybody else, and he changed the water that was standing there into wine. And that was a picture of what he was going to do throughout his ministry and what I believe he's doing throughout history. That when I invite him into my life, when a man surrenders his will to Christ, Christ takes that water and that ordinariness, that plainness, and he changes it into wine. So that if Christ is our light, at the end of life, we can say, he's kept the best until now.